listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Good afternoon. You're listening to KYRS. I'm Taylor, host of Praxis, and I'm here live in the studio today with a full house of amazing women to talk about amazing women in history and now. So we're just going to do a little roundtable of introductions. I've got Sherry Jones, Amanda Mansfield, and Latoya Brackett here, some partially from Spokane National Organization for Women, mostly all. And we're talking about the upcoming International Women's Day celebration on Saturday, the 19th. And we'll give you more details about that throughout the hour. Keynote speaker is going to be Loretta Ross. I'm in the process of setting up an interview with her for later in the month. This is International Women's Month, and last week I had a fun drive show, so we were talking all about raising money for the station and how great the station is, but the rest of the month is going to be dedicated to women, and really a lot of the rest of the year. I've been doing this show for 4 years and trying to really focus on featuring women this year as a woman. So I don't know who wants to go first, but I'd love to just hear and share with the audience who each of you are and what your history is with the women's movement, with feminism.
Sure. Hi, my name is Amanda Mansfield. I'm president of the Spokane Area Chapter of the National Organization for Women. And I'm a recent arrival to Spokane. I'm from New York originally. I studied women's studies in undergrad and then taught it in grad school. And started this chapter with two other members last summer. And really, I guess, to put it succinctly, I felt that I'd had enough of walking through what I like to call toxic air, which is the term I use to describe what I think it's like to be a woman on a daily basis. You're just walking through an environment where you're getting a barrage of constant negative messaging about your appearance, about your ability to achieve, etc. That ultimately results in what I thought with lower self-esteem and lower rates of achievement, and that kind of stuff just really got to me, and finally I decided I wanted to do something about it.
My name is Sherry Jones, and I am an author living in Spokane, and I write novels about kick-ass women in history, and that's been my contribution to feminism until I found out about the revival of the creation of Spokane Area Now. And I grew up in a rural southern family, and experienced and witnessed discrimination against women in the church, in daily life, in my workplace. I just got tired of living in a man's world, so I'm doing what I can to change that.
My name is Latoya Brackett, and I'd have to say that I'm a womanist, but a womanist is based on Black studies. I have a undergraduate degree in Black studies and also a PhD in Black studies, and Black women had to create womanism, which means basically we focus on our race and our gender, because in the movement for Black issues, we were put on the back burner by men, Black men. And then with the movement with feminist issues, we were put on the back burner by white women. And honestly, I didn't really start defining myself as a womanist until the last couple of years here in Spokane, when I realized that my gender actually did start to matter in regards to myself feeling discriminated against within my own race. By men, African-American men. And I started recognizing that, and I started to reread things that I'd already studied in my great education. It was not that it was not discussed. It was just that I wasn't focusing on it so much, because even Black women back then in SNCC, which we might talk about today, would see that race came first at the time, because that was the most important aspect that they needed to fight for. And I too had that, but then I realized I wasn't recognizing that I was being pushed to the back burner because of my gender. And so I started to focus on writings of some of the greats, and recognizing that I need to focus on this. And obviously the feminist ideals through history, historically, were not fitting for me. And so I went with the womanist term. And so I am a womanist, and I am focusing on what I, as a Black woman in American society, need. And I've definitely recognized it in the last 2 years. And it's very key. And it's great to know that history to better understand where I am currently right now.
Yeah. And I think we'll, I'm sure actually, that we'll take a look at that today, you know, talking about where is that Venn diagram today between the feminist movement and the womanist movement. And, you know, is intersectional feminism, you know, something that's going to like embrace all of that? Where are we at with people embracing everything that that's going to mean for an inclusive movement for and by all women? So I'm really excited that that conversation is happening, particularly somewhere like Spokane, where I think it can be a little, not to downtalk Spokane, but I think it can be a little more difficult to initiate conversations like these, let alone action, the kind of action that we need in a community that is very, very ingrained in certain ways. So, so this, I pulled up the details while we were all introducing ourselves about International Women's Day. It's this coming Saturday from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. The keynote speaker I'm really excited about is Loretta Ross. She has been, a decades-long advocate for reproductive justice and activist, and she'll be talking about the movement for reproductive justice at that keynote speech. The keynote starts at 6. The event starts at 4. Does anyone want to talk about a little bit about what people can expect attending International Women's Day, since Spokane now is one of the co-sponsors of the event?
Yeah, sure. So, yes, Spokane Area Now is co-sponsoring it. It's going to be a wonderful event. In addition to having Loretta Ross, who's such a well-regarded expert on sexism, racism, and reproductive justice, there's also going to be an arts component to it, which we're really excited about. The event is free for all. It also provides childcare, so providing access to a lot of women who otherwise couldn't come. And there'll be also a resource fair. And Spokane Area Now is going to have a table there, so you can come on by and say hi to us, get to know us, find out what we're working on, tell us what you want to work on, and we'll see how we can work together to help you achieve your womanist, feminist, social justice goals. And then, of course, there'll be lots of other awesome organizations tabling as well. So it'll be a great event.
Great. And so I think that leads to talking about NOW. So when I think of NOW, National Organization for Women, I think of its inception stage, you know, late 60s, early 70s, during this period, you know, civil rights era, just a huge movement era. And then, you know, haven't heard anything from, you know, and I think they've been working that whole time. But why start this Spokane chapter? Why now? Why at this moment? Restart NOW, the organization, and what are some of the goals and aims as we find ourselves here in 2016?
Well, it's pretty soon. LaToya is going to talk about some really interesting history about the origin of NOW that we found extremely important and extremely revealing. And that sort of reflects where we want this chapter to go in the future. So NOW is a 50-year-old organization this year. It's the largest organization of feminist activists in the U.S. It has hundreds of thousands of members and more than 500 local and campus affiliates. Its platform is dedicated to reproductive justice, LGBTQIA rights, racial justice, economic, ending violence against women, and, of course, the ERA. So, as I said, this summer I got together with a couple of more seasoned NOW vets. There had been previous iterations of NOW in Spokane. And we thought, you know, this is very timely. There's a lot of issues that are very troubling to women of color, to the LGBTQIA community. And we wanted to do something about it instead of just being upset about it. So that's the sort of typical brief history of NOW and what NOW is about. NOW, it's the current iteration of NOW, of National NOW, is striving to align itself with third wave feminism or intersectional feminism, which is what LaToya is going to touch on pretty soon. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're all about, essentially. You know, I've heard people say they think NOW is the national organization for some women, aka privileged white women. And that's not what I want at all. That's not interesting to me. It doesn't feel right. obviously. So we're doing what we can to try to learn from people like LaToya and try to put ourselves into sort of insert ourselves into the local racial justice movement as appropriate, where we're needed, so we can learn about our own privilege, so we can see how we can be of assistance, and so that we can incorporate particularly the perspectives of women of color and the LGBTQIA community into all of our actions. So that's an ongoing focus of ours through all of our committee work and our outreach.
Yeah.
So I think,
LaToya, do you want to talk about that history? And yeah, because that's not a history that I know yet. So
yeah, in February I went to a NOW meeting, and prior to that I wanted to figure out how I could add something to, you know, the meeting and to everyone's information. I always, you know, there's a proverb, an African proverb, Sankofa, you know, you have to know, basically it's saying you need to know where you came from in order to know where you're going. And, you know, as you basically said, you knew probably more about NOW than people who could be in any NOW chapter around the country would know about NOW. A lot of people don't necessarily know the history of the organizations they're a part of. And I can even say that probably about people in NAACP chapters around the country. They're probably just like, oh, I'm in this. And a family member of mine asked me a question about NAACP, and I was like, really? She was older, and I was like, that's not true. But she asked me because she's like, you have that degree, you should know all the facts. And I was like, yeah, I guess I do. But people don't necessarily know where the organization comes from. And so I actually picked up a book off of my shelf of the many books that I have, and it's called When and Where I Enter, The Impact of Black Women on Race and Sex in America, and it's by Paula Giddings. And I didn't expect to find a whole chapter entitled The Women's Movement and Black Discontent. And in this chapter, it actually focuses on how it Paula Giddings states that it was actually the civil rights movement, and specifically SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinated Committee, and that was a catalyst to the creation of NOW. And so she did this research, and it was found that so as students go to the South, white women were able to go to the South and they joined SNCC. And I'm just going to read this one quick little section, here. It said, with the group centered egalitarian values of SNCC, any activist who worked hard inevitably had some say in policy decisions. Thus, many of the white women gained a respect for their own abilities that would not have been possible in other organizations. Additionally, they benefited from seeing black women as a new kind of role model. One specific woman, Stembridge, she wrote about Fannie Lou Hamer, who we know as a great quote, sick and tired of being sick and tired. But she spoke about her briefly a little bit more in this section. It's quoted here. And she basically talks about she says that Hamer was more educated than she was. And we would probably think, well, you were in college, you went down, how is she more educated than you were? But she was talking about her being more educated than her in the sense of recognizing that Hamer recognized more about herself being a person than Stembridge did. And that it wasn't even about her being more of a woman, just seeing herself as a person and having more power. And so what the women saw when they were at SNCC, when they were helping in SNCC, when they were having a part of this organization, and they saw that they can make a difference and they weren't put on the back burner, was that they too could make a difference. And they saw these black women making a difference, and they found role models in them. And so it was out of this that eventually white women started to basically start their own liberation movement. And I don't have all the details through this, but you can look it up. And then there was a position paper where two women actually do critique within SNCC also, and this is where the womanist issue comes in, that black women were indeed did suffer from sexism within SNCC. However, there is a quote, one says, I'm certain that our single-minded focus on the issues of racial discrimination and the black struggle for equality blinded us to other issues, because it's 1960s there in the South, there's a bigger issue at hand. And so from there, it started a catalyst of white women getting this idea that we can do stuff too. And it is posited that's where it started from. And I don't think a lot of people recognize that, but we can also recognize that the nonviolence that was in the civil rights movement was a catalyst to a lot of different movement, you know, ways in which different movements and organizations began.
Mm-hmm.
And this one too.
Yeah. And I'd like to, that's such a beautiful history to learn too, because it shows, and it also upsets me too, because it shows how at that moment people were really starting to look at oppression and all the different ways it overlaps and work together despite that. And then a lot of things happened, you know, I mean, the Vietnam War ends, a lot of movement stuff kind of goes into a lower gear. And I think the corporate world, the rise of, you know, corporate totalitarianism in the U.S. kind of absorbs a lot of energy, gives people to some extent, you know, increased access to institutional power. And then that really like degrades a lot of the integrity of certain social movements because people get integrated into those power structures. And now we're at a point, I think, where a lot of that has fallen apart again. And we're at this really exciting moment where women are, you know, standing up against things from harassment, as we're talking about, to ongoing threats for, you know, bodily autonomy as women. Black Lives Matter just like not going anywhere to the, you know, to the dismay of a lot of the white power structure. And that's led by women of color, you know, and the, you know, organizing by undocumented people in the U.S., also largely led by women internationally. I just think we're kind of at that similar moment. And now we need to do all of this analysis again, because so much of that knowledge is lost. So what does that process look like within now and within Spokane?
I can speak to that. As I mentioned before, I mean, I can just speak to what the sort of core executive committee of Spokane Area Now wants this chapter to become. And again, we were super grateful for Latoya coming and educating us. And as I mentioned, some of the concrete steps we plan on taking so that we can become truly intersectional is to educate ourselves. I think that's a key first step. You have to address your own bias, your own privilege. And I think one way we're hoping to approach that is to start a book club where we discuss these kinds of topics. So we're still looking for somebody to lead that if anyone in the audience is interested. We're also looking to, as I said, you know, become active, productive, useful members of local racial justice groups and be of service where we're needed. And we're looking to just, as we implement our committee actions, carefully consider, you know, every time we think this is an issue we want to work on, are we by default thinking about just white privileged women's issues?
Yeah. And how can people contact you if they hear that and they say, I want to do the book group?
Oh, absolutely. Well, we have a Facebook page, Spokane Area Now Facebook, but you can also email me. It's now.spokane@gmail.com. That's now.spokane@gmail.com. And we'll plug you in.
Perfect. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to KYRS, Thin Air Community Radio. The program is Praxis. I'm live in the studio with Latoya Brackett, Amanda Mansfield, and Sherry Jones talking about International Women's Day celebration coming up, some of the foundational reality of the women's movement as we see it today, feminism, womanism, intersectionality, all the rest. And I'm really happy that you're all here with me today. I'm pretty curious to hear what type of campaign work is going on, because I think when we talk about women's rights and women's issues, there's a perception among some proportion of the population that says, well, what do you want? Like, women are equal now, right? And I mean, I know that we all kind of just chuckled because we acknowledge that that's not true. But I'm curious, like, what are the campaigns that are urgent here in our community that you're working on?
Well, I'm going to let Sherry Jones start in on that because she's doing something really wonderful and we're really excited about it. So go take it away.
One of the joys of working for an organization like NOW is that we are a political organization. And so we can be the ones to speak out and stick our necks out and take the chances, you know, make people angry or stick up for women in ways that other organizations who rely on money from, for example, the city of Spokane might not feel comfortable doing. You know, we're a grassroots organization and we're totally independent. So one of the first things that our first big campaign that we're doing, our first political campaign, is that we have filed a complaint with the Spokane Ethics Commission against Mayor David Condon, accusing him for his being dishonest with the people of Spokane around sexual harassment complaints that were, and sexual harassment and sexual assault complaints that were lodged directly with him by a female employee of the Spokane Police Department last April. And the police chief was the abuser. And she went to the mayor, and he took action. He transferred her out of the police department, and then he did nothing else. He did not investigate. He didn't. There was, as far as we can tell, that nothing more happened. He just completely swept it under the rug. And this is wrong. We know, or we believe, that the reason he did this was because was running for re-election. And you know how hard it is in Spokane to get elected to a second term as mayor. The mere whiff of scandal will send the voters somewhere else. So basically, he covered up sexual harassment in the city of Spokane. He covered it up to cover his own ass. And we filed a complaint against him. We got, with the help of the Center for Justice, Rick Eichstadt, the executive director, is acting as our attorney. We're very grateful to have his representation, because the mayor has his own high-powered attorney, very prominent high-powered attorney in Spokane. And so our complaint actually was unanimously accepted by the Ethics Commission as meeting the jurisdiction, and which the next step should be a hearing. But that happened in January, and we still don't have our hearing. The mayor's attorney has filed a number of motions, including a motion to dismiss, as though the Ethics Commission were a court of law, which it is not. It's a volunteer board, volunteer commission. We have concerns over this as well, in that it takes away from the ability of the ordinary citizen to, if the ordinary citizen has a complaint against any city official, and they have to face a high-powered attorney that the city official can afford to hire, then that's going to limit or even completely hamstring any person from filing a complaint and having it heard. So the Ethics Commission has decided that the assistant city attorney who has been advising the Ethics Commission needed to be replaced with someone who didn't report directly to the mayor, decided there was a conflict of interest. So now the whole process has been delayed. They recently got an attorney, recently hired an attorney, but now we're trying to schedule the hearing on the mayor's motion to dismiss and his motion to withdraw, I think. So we're trying to schedule it. It was supposed to happen in March 23rd, but that's been postponed. Now we're looking at June as a possible date, because the mayor's attorney isn't available. I guess he has a hearing that's going to take 2 months. And so, you know, it's possible the mayor's office is thinking that if we just delay and delay, that we'll lose our enthusiasm, or but that's not going to happen. We're going to hold Mayor Condon's feet to the fire. And the more time we have, the more we can just organize and get our membership to rally around this more and more. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is really bad. What they did, one of the reasons this is such a bad thing is because, you know, actually there are several reasons. And I just want to say that the women in the Spokane Police Department were left for 5 months before the police chief left. They were left for 5 months working potentially under a sexual abuser. That's a hostile work environment. Surely the other women in the police department knew what was going on, mm-hmm. and may have experienced it themselves. And people don't want to come forward because they're afraid that their jobs will be on the line. The victim who complained to Mayor Condon got assigned to the Parks Department, but now she's resigned because she's found out that job was only a temporary job and she has no other recourse. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the broader topic of the message this sends. You know, 80% of women who were sexually harassed or assaulted never report, because they, and one of the big reasons is because they don't believe anything will be done about it. They're also afraid something will happen to them, like happened to Monique Cotton, and they'll lose their job. Mm-hmm. But this lack of faith in the institutions, you know, the mayor is supposed to be the leader, our leader, and he's supposed to provide his employees with a safe work environment. And the message to the women of the Spokane Police Department, to the women who work in the city, for the city of Spokane, and then the broader community, is that sexual harassment and sexual assault are not serious crimes, or they're not serious offenses. They don't even deserve an investigation. And that is wrong. And we want women to know, we want women in Spokane to feel safe at work mm-hmm. and otherwise.
Absolutely. And yeah, I want to thank you for doing that work, you know, as an organization who can. It overlaps so interestingly with police oversight, which is something that I've done a lot of work on this show. And I was just at the, speaking of intersectional work, I mean, I was just at the community forum on racism in policing, where Jim McDevitt, the interim police chief, was being questioned about his op-ed that he published that had inaccurate and I think we can just safely say very offensive material in it regarding African-American men. So he was confronted by, you know, 85 community members. It was a very interesting meeting. And the assistant chief was asked, they were asked about diversity within the police force. And it's kind of framed as like, oh, if we just hired more officers of color and more diverse officers, these problems would be solved, which I don't think is entirely true. I think it's part of the problem, you know, is a lack of diversity within the force, but also the lack of racial competence within the less diverse within the white men who are in the force and women. But they made a very interesting statement that, you know, we have a very stringent hiring process, and kind of implied that these other people, they just can't pass our background check. And yet, you know, like you have people, you have people who have, you know, sexually assaulted their coworkers at a party.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You have this all the way up to the top with the chief. And I just think it's going to take confronting these institutions in order to eventually totally change the way they do things. You know, like these things are so normalized because men and white men have been in charge of them for so long that those issues are what's prioritized, you know. So
right. And well, you know, so many women don't speak out about sexual harassment because they feel this incredible shame around it. And you know, that attitude that oppresses women comes from the top down, and it starts with the mayor and then it goes to the police chief, but that permeates the whole police department. And so one could even argue that Frank Straub, the former police chief, was indirectly responsible for the other incidents that have happened in the police department under his watch. He didn't exercise good leadership either. This is systematic. I mean, this systemic, you know, there was another woman recently, there was an article in the Inlander about another employee of the city who has now filed a sexual harassment suit or filed a lawsuit against the city because she was terribly harassed. She was the only woman in her department, and they had a separate locker room for her to dress in, and it was urinated in. It was, mm-hmm. I mean, there were all kinds of awful things that happened in that locker room. It was obviously she was being harassed, and the men were showing nude photos of women on their phones to each other in front of her, and just making all these comments. And she went to Human Resources a number of times. And the only thing that was ever done was the lock was changed to the locker room, but someone got in there anyway. And so she ended up feeling, you know, they did sexual harassment training. And, you know, at first, and now we were thinking we should ask for maybe, you know, everyone to have sexual harassment training or sexual harassment awareness training. But they had it in her department and it didn't do any good. In fact, it was used against her by the other men in the department. And so, you know, I'm starting to think the only thing that really will work is a zero tolerance policy, and that we demand that the city have the strongest enforcement against, you know, whenever there was a complaint, there should be instant investigation and, you know, find out who did it. I mean, they surely could have gotten the DNA from the evidence, of, you know, which of the men in her department was doing this. And as far as I can tell, that was never really seriously investigated. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it certainly, you know, sets a tone for everyone. And then it reinforces itself, because why would a woman apply for that position, hearing all of this in the news and seeing, well, nothing's happening about it. It's just like the reporting statistics that you said. So,
well, and you know, how many, I mean, every woman I've asked many women, have you ever been sexually harassed at work? And only one woman I've ever known said no. Mm-hmm. Everyone I know has been sexually harassed in the workplace at some mm-hmm. point in their career, at least once, in school, in college, in the workplace, and then, of course, in everyday life. But specifically in the workplace where you feel like you ought to be, you know, you're supposed to be safe, you're supposed to be doing your job, and you have specific goals related to your work, and yet you're still treated like, you know, a sexual object. And, you know, this shouldn't be happening in this day and age. You know, we need to stand up and speak out and share our stories with each other and demand better from our leaders.
And with regard to what Sherry said about the no tolerance policy, we're wanting that also to apply to any kind of act of aggression against the LGBTQIA community and people of color within the department and the city.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I wanted to touch on the fact that human resources, you know, I recently was doing a lot of research on bullying in the workplace, and there's a website called workplacebullying.org, and they're actually out of Seattle, and they have a lot of resources right there on their website. You could probably get all the answers that you need just from there. But basically, they say human resources are there for the organization. And unfortunately, you can go and report all you want. You can do all those things. And chances are they're really going to be doing it for the organization. And I'm also wondering to what extent these women that might be reporting these things are reporting to other women, and how it might feel when another woman is invalidating you. Mm-hmm. Or in some cases, if we talk about issues dealing with race or LGBTQ communities, when you might be talking to someone like for race that might be, that looks like you, and they're saying, you know, they're invalidating your experience, and then you're like, okay, well, I guess I'm not supposed to report this. They say it's okay. So I think a lot of times when it comes to issues like this, there needs to be an outside person to report to, where they have no tie with the department or anything like that, especially when it comes to a city. I think that there is no need to necessarily have to deal with reporting issues like this within the house. And as you were talking about the lawyer aspect mm-hmm. already, mm-hmm. you guys are going, you're like, we need to go outside. Mm-hmm. That is so pertinent, and it's necessary mm-hmm. Because you wonder if they're worried about their job. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, because they have a role as well. And those aspects, and then you don't know who to trust. You thought you could trust them because maybe they were a woman and they would understand. You thought you could trust them because maybe they were of the same background in some kind of way as you. But then you couldn't. But you might have been better off just going completely outside of the whole institution altogether and just reporting it. But you didn't think that far along, that far ahead. It's all institutional. And also you were talking about how, what woman would want to go work there now? Mm-hmm. What person of color is going to want to go work in the police department now? Mm-hmm. If you know, and in those cases, if you don't want to be the one, so you're going to have to hire a cohort or so. You're not going to just be able to hire one. You're going to have to hire a group so that there is some support, which a lot of these institutions aren't willing to do. And then, you know, the whole, like, they're not qualified enough. You know, I think we just had a Supreme Court justice who, God rest his soul, had passed, but had basically said that these students aren't qualified to go to those universities in the first place. So I guess they're, you know, so let's talk about the rhetoric in our society today that has those undertones. Mm-hmm. But all of that is very prevalent in big institutions, whether it's higher ed, for hiring people and things like that. I think human resources is great, but sometimes I don't think it's there for the purposes of reporting certain issues.
Yeah, it really points out the need to just restructure so much of what we're doing. You know, your idea of hiring a cohort, I can't imagine any major institution saying yes, because it actually threatens the power. And I loved, there's a line in a piece that you recently wrote that I heard that I think is about a personal experience, but saying, oh, if you leave because you can't deal with this, we'll find another one. Mm-hmm. And what you said about having like mm-hmm. the one female employee or the one, you know, black woman in the whole office, this idea that I think is a holdout from that corporate maneuver towards, oh, diversity is just numbers and yep. we have a quota and that's what diversity is going to look like, rather than saying, doing a full, you know, I'm in the process with an organization I work with of doing a huge racial justice evaluation. And I think we felt like, oh yeah, we're pretty good. And then we started going through what that would look like and realizing we're going to have to restructure things about this organization. And I think we're lucky because a lot of people in leadership see it as an opportunity, you know, like what have we been missing out on by not being all together in the room, rather than, oh, what are we going to have to give up? You know, so.
Can I add something to that, Taylor?
Please.
That touches on another one of the important things we're doing with another committee, the Economic Justice Committee. Mm-hmm. So the city of Spokane, as many in your audience may know, has developed a gender and race pay equity task force that produced a report that has some really solid, smart solutions that ideally will become policy for how to genuinely increase diversity in a substantial culture-changing way within the city. It points out the great disparity in income, particularly, you know, it points out the disparity of income between, you know, white women and white men, and Latino women and white men, African-American women, Asian women, et cetera. And it just gets worse and worse. Mm-hmm. And it also points out the disproportionately small number of women and then women of color in certain industries within the city. So that's all something that this task force is taking on.
Wow.
And we're really excited to be a part of it. And so that's one thing we're trying to pursue, is joining with the city to work on making those solutions presented in the report actual policy. And so our Economic Justice Committee, one thing we might be able to do in coordination with them is create and implement salary negotiation curriculum. So that's something we're working on. We're hoping to deliver by the end of the year. We're going to start out delivering the curriculum to working women. We're going to move on to women in university age. We're hoping to take it as low as middle school girls to teach them about, you know, the history of pay inequity, why it's so important for them to have that confidence, and train them how to have that confidence and how to negotiate their own salary. And of course, it's going to have an intersectional perspective. Because, of course, if you're a white woman nervous about negotiating for your salary, it's you're certainly going to be nervous if you're a woman of color or LGBTQIA woman, et cetera. There's going to be more barriers in front of you to negotiating your salary. So that's one exciting thing we're doing with the Eco Justice Committee. I also wanted to mention we have a Love Your Body Self-Esteem Committee. We're also working on curriculum to address slut shaming and fat shaming, particularly in middle school and high school. And we're looking to use a sort of theater of the oppressed interactive method. So a very engaged a dialogue kind of approach to this curriculum that we're creating to really get girls to fully realize the impact of the words that they say to each other, the consequences of internet bullying. So I just wanted to make sure I plugged those two awesome campaigns we're promoting.
That's exciting, especially the theater aspect. Anything theater I'm going to be excited about.
Good.
But if you're just joining us on the air, you're listening to Praxis, you're listening to KYRS Thin Air Community Radio. I'm talking with Sherry Jones, Amanda Mansfield, and Latoya Brackett about all kinds of things, but specifically just now, these are campaigns that we've been talking about of Spokane Area Now, National Organization for Women. You can find them on Facebook at Spokane, just by looking up Spokane Area Now. I'll have that link posted in the notes for this podcast, which you can find either by finding Praxis on KYRS.org or on Facebook at facebook.com/PraxisRadio, PRAXISRADIO. And we are also talking a little bit about what's going to be going on at International Women's Day, the Spokane celebration. The actual day was the 8th, but I think that, you know, we get more than one day, like, you know, we get more than 1 month, half the population here. So the actual celebration is this coming Saturday, the 19th, 4 to 8 p.m. at Riverside Place, colloquially known as the Masonic Temple, still rebranded and running as Riverside Place. It's a beautiful space, and it's going to be a resource fair starting at 4. Lots of arts stuff going on all day, and a keynote by Loretta Ross, an incredible activist for reproductive justice. The Women's Day event has posted some video of her that's a really exciting kind of like teaser to get you out there to hear from her, because she just has a legacy of work on reproductive justice and kind of bringing a lot of different groups of women of color into the public, you know, to talk about these reproductive issues that were not talked about, you know, that weren't being talked about by white women or women of color at the time. And a few years later, we had Roe v. Wade, and, you know, the rest is history. But, you know, I think we're in a time of attack on those rights as well. So yeah, I'm excited for it. And what else do you all want people to know about? Do you have questions for each other? I always just like to kind of...
I wanted to add to, you were talking about the economic Justice Committee, and I actually have written two book chapters. One is already published on economic situations of African Americans. The other one, I just did the proof for SUNY Press, Race Still Matters, which will be coming out hopefully in December. And I found my statistic that I like to share with people, and it talks about, and it basically covers this intersectionality issue as well. So single African-American women aged 36 to 49 have a net worth of $5. And white women the same age, 36 to 49, have a net worth of $42,600. So let's think about that. So when we talk about, you know, if this economic justice group for now, what it's for women, but what are you who are you going to be focusing on? Is it going to be for the most dire situation, or is it going to be, you know, so we think about that, and we think about the fact that African-American women earn 63 cents for every dollar of a white man. So, you know, but we make 85 cents to every dollar of a white woman. Mm-hmm. So we think about breaking it down further, because this, it's not, so when you say woman and we start doing the numbers of women as a whole to breaking down that economic situation, you can break it down further and divide it further. And there's a bigger gap and there's a bigger issue at hand here. The simple fact is we don't have that wealth in the African American community. We don't have, you know, the net, our net worth is an issue there if we have $5. And this is a time period, 36 to 49. That's a very important, you know, right at that fate, in that time period, we should really be settling. You know, we should really be thinking, okay, 15 years after that, you know, that 49, we're going to be starting to possibly collect Social Security. It's there. But African-American women also are the least, earn the least in Social Security earnings, because we are mostly in service jobs, mm-hmm. especially the generations before us were mostly taking care of others. So you have to think about those things that also make us less likely to benefit from even services in American society as well. So I wanted to throw that out there and talk about the fact that the economic situations are very important. And so some of these things will also divide, can also divide these organizations when we're saying, well, what, you know, we might raise our hand and say, but what about, you know, and if we do put in there, well, what about black women, or what about the LGBT community, or what about, you know, Latina women, or what about, and then people are like, you know, so that creates, can sometimes create a divide and an issue, but it's not trying to push away another plight. It's trying to say that as a whole, you know, if we're focusing on women as a whole, we have to focus on all women, and we have to focus on the fact that if some women are having worse issue, you know, to build up the whole group, mm-hmm. and we have to think about not, you know, what is the majority of women in this world are women of color. Mm-hmm. So we have to think about that. And I wanted to share those statistics because that's a staggering statistic.
Yeah, it is. That's
you know, incredible. I put that $5 in my pocket. $42,000 is not going to go in my pocket.
Yeah.
So that's a really big one. And
well, you know, it's admittedly hard to imagine a lot of women in a lot of different types of work situations having the luxury of negotiating their salary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I agree that there is a whole nother segment of women whose needs need to be addressed in a different way.
And that's the intent of this. It's really at the very beginning, but that's the intent of this campaign, is to create curriculum that is widely useful to as many different types of women and as many different types of work situations as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But we absolutely, as LaToya just pointed out, we can use all the input we can get mm-hmm. from women of varied backgrounds, so we make sure that we are indeed making this a program that is helpful to all women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you nailed it when you said lifting up the whole apparatus, you know, all women, because that's sort of a super condensed, simplified version of this history with the civil rights movement, you know, the black women in the civil rights movement saying, what about us? What about women? And the men saying, we got to solve the race stuff later. Later. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the white women in the women's movement saying to the black women, well, we'll deal with the race stuff later. Right now it's about, you know, equal rights for women. Like, so it was this from both sides, later, 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 later. And we're here, and it later has not come. So I think reversing that and examining that and being honest about it and saying, okay, now it's fitting with the name.
Kelly Ray Matthews with Spokane Feminist Forum, she put on two films in a row. She put on one, gosh, I'm forgetting their names, but there was one about the history of feminism.
She's beautiful when she's angry.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then there was another one about black women in the civil rights movement. And I went to both of these films, and I learned for the first time, really, about the intricacies of the history of the women's movement, and for African-American women, as well as for white women. And I was really struck by how there's been so much divisioning, or, you know, divisiveness among different groups of women, and you know, that this film explores quite honestly how the National Organization for Women at first pushed out, for mm-hmm. example, lesbian women, because mm-hmm. they didn't want that connotation, that it won't be associated. Yeah. We were already accused of being dykes. We don't want to, you know,
the lavender menace, right?
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, I thought that, in putting both films together, I thought that we now have an opportunity to work together and to join together. And, you know, even though I'm not black, and, you know, I'm as white as can be, probably, and pink even, but, you know, I'm a woman, and I've experienced discrimination all my life too. I know how much it hurts and how devalued you can feel. And, so, you know, I think that, if we could all work together, if women of color and all various, oppressed groups could work together, that we could really be a powerful force for change, and that divided, you know, united we stand, right?
Exactly.
I mean, it's an idealistic vision, but it is something that, one thing I really love about Spokane area now is that vision of intersectionality and of all the different oppressed voices speaking together against the patriarchal system that's held everyone down.
Heck yeah.
I guess the question is, however, what do you do when, you know, if you have within a group someone who doesn't want to embrace what you were basically saying? So, you know, they're the ones saying later. Mm-hmm. Like, if there's one voice or two voices that say later, and don't want to embrace that. So, and then you have this pushback that can sometimes, you know, alter the whole environment of a group. Mm-hmm. And that is very problematic at times. It could divide and conquer, you know, and it can push out those couple of people from those other groups that do decide to come, you know, because they could just decide, you know, I don't need this. I'll just go to the other group that I feel comfortable with. Mm-hmm. Because it takes a lot of energy and effort to constantly get, you know, to go against the grain in something that you never really felt welcome in the first place. So what do you do if there's a couple of people that say later, because that's just the way that's always been, mm-hmm. Or that's their mindset? And I think, you know, Amanda was talking about the books and things like that, but still people may not be ready to embrace an ideology of something of now, or any group to embrace, you know, this, what it should have been all along. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Not to say that it's changing, but probably what it's meant to be. I mean, you said women. You didn't say some women originally. You said women. So, you know, I kind of want to throw that kind of question out there for everybody, kind of, you know, because it's a hard thing to, when you have one person or two people that are just like, no. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a difficult task. Mm-hmm. And then it puts extra difficulty on people who might decide to come and try. And then you just slowly see them not come back. that's hard.
Mm-hmm. And that brings to mind a presentation that I heard at the PGEL's Peace and Economic Justice Action Conference given by Jackie Vaughn from Planned Parenthood on reproductive justice. And I think in those instances, what we would hope to do, perhaps needing outside help to do so correctly, would be to the best of our ability to communicate that message that if one group steps forward but the other group stay behind, it's not really a success. It's just a splintering situation. Mm-hmm. So you need to really pull all the groups forward together. I mean, it's not just idealistic, it's practical. If you want your movement to succeed, everybody has to be under that umbrella for it to truly be robust. I mean, something to that effect, but you know, explained more convincingly what would I think be what we would do to sort of convince those people who are not looking to embrace this new type of feminism. That's how we would try to keep them in. But if they couldn't stay in, then, you know, the movement's more important, I would say, than people who aren't comfortable moving in that direction.
That's one of the joys of being in this particular chapter, is that we have that clear mandate from our leader, from our leadership all the way down. And so, you know, that's the direction we're going in. That's the direction we're being led.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate mm-hmm. that from you, Amanda.
Oh, thank you.
I think that part of it, too, is about the education's really important. And relationships are equally as important, that if you're not building actual relationships with people and understanding mm-hmm. each other, it's really easy to fall victim to that divisiveness. Because mm-hmm. I think as women, you know, as a white woman, I do, when we're talking about women's issues, I get mad because I think of all the times I've been discriminated against as a woman. I think about, you know, my daily walking commute, you know, I think about all these things mm-hmm. and it can be hard to hear that when you are in a privileged position and you're not used to hearing, you're not considering all these other things. Mm-hmm. It can sound like your pain isn't valuable. Mm-hmm. And I think the more we're grounded in relationships with each other, the more we can see, like build that empathy mm-hmm. and the listening, which is why actual groups that physically meet together are so important, you know?
Yes. And the arts are important too. Mm-hmm. And you know, you did a great zine release.
Thank you.
Around Smashing Patriarchy last week. I loved it. And all the poets reading, male and female, which was really interesting and enlightening. And we've been talking about putting together a monthly gathering for feminists, you know, women, men, women of color, transgender, all the different, anyone who could consider themselves a womanist or a feminist, could come and talk about feminist issues or womanist issues or equality issues and share our stories with each other. And we've also been talking about incorporating the arts into that mm. and maybe doing a feminist slam poetry, mm. call it Fem Slam, mm. and or have a, you know, women showing their art, you know. So it's we recognize in our organization the value of bringing women together and sharing our stories, and we're looking for ways to do that. And you know, please write to us at you know, now.spokane@gmail.com if you want to be on the mailing list, and we will certainly let you know when we get those gatherings up and going.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really important way to do it. And the more we have the other thing about people saying no, you know, is that the more you have, it's always this, it's this tightrope right now of people who have more access in the current system, you know, yeah. who can engage those institutions while we're lifting up everybody, making sure that those people who are already relatively privileged, you know, the white women in this case, white straight women in this case, making sure that those are people who are having ongoing education, getting checked, you know, having people, having a culture where it's comfortable to say like, hey, you know, what you just said was not okay. And so that, you know, I've been doing a lot of work with anti-racism for white people, and it's just, it's a fascinating balance of, as of now in the status quo, white people will listen to other white people, credibly. Men will listen to other men. Like, so there's this whole cultural shift. I don't know where I'm going with that. But we've got 5 minutes left. What else do you want people to know?
I want to make sure that everyone knows that we have monthly meetings the third Wednesday of every month at 6 p.m. currently at the downtown Spokane Library, meeting room 1A. And also that We talked briefly about the importance of creating, advocacy communities through social bonds. So we partnered with Spokane Shrinking Violet Society, which is a great community of exciting, awesome women who formed lots of social bonds with each other. And through that partnership, we have the Ladies Who Lunch. Well, Ladies Who Lunch has been around for a while, but now it's a group of Spokane Shrinking Violet Society members and Spokane Area Now members coming together at Boots, and that's every second Saturday at 11:30 at Boots. So you can come to either the third Wednesday chapter meeting, 6 p.m. library, or you can come to that Ladies Who Lunch.
Which is this coming Wednesday, right?
Exactly. This coming Wednesday. So this Wednesday of this week at Downtown Spokane Library, 6 p.m.
Great.
Yes, and we will be having sexual harassment training.
We will. That will be one of the presentations by Lutheran Community Services. They'll be doing a sexual harassment 101. We're also going to be doing a how to get politically engaged presentation, a caucusing 101, that kind of thing. And we'll be presenting on all the great things that our committees are doing.
That's awesome. And just another reminder that International Women's Day celebration is this Saturday, the 19th, 4 to 8 p.m. Riverside Place, which is just downtown on Riverside. It's at 1110 West Riverside Avenue. You may know it as the Masonic Temple Building. And that will be featuring Loretta Ross, who will also be featured on this show, I believe, on the final Monday of this month. We're setting up a phone interview. But yeah, so that's exciting. I'm really happy for all of the work that all of you are doing. And it makes me much more hopeful for this city that sometimes seems very entrenched in old world politics, and we're pushing through that. So yeah, the final I had one other thing I wanted to do. What do you think, each of you kind of in turn, what is the biggest issue, kind of the underlying root issue in just like a phrase or a sentence for you that we need to address as women if we're going to move forward successfully this way that we've been talking about?
Big one. Well, for me, in regards to Black women, and this has been something that I've really come to recognize recently, and Bell Hooks talks about it a lot, it's the violence between Black women, I think even between women of color, and it's not a physical violence, it's a mental kind of violence, it's kind of a bullying thing, and I'm really big on this. We need to support each other. Mm-hmm. That's the underlying, that's it. We need to support each other, and truly, idealistically support each other and not tear each other down. And when we get to spaces where we can actually support each other, do that, be transparent with each other, love each other, really be there for one another. And I was just reminded by Amanda that I should plug myself. So once again, my name is Latoya Brack. I'm really glad to be here today. And I actually have a website. It's Bracket, as in my last name, Bracket, Perception, Perception, I think, .com. So please go there. I have a blog, and I'm also on Facebook, and I would love to hear from you all. And you can probably see the book that's already out that has my book chapter in there on economic situations of African Americans. And then when the other one comes out, you'll see that too. Mm-hmm. But thank you again, and love each other. Be kind to each other.
And I'll include that link on the notes here too. So if you're looking at the podcast notes, Latoya's website will be on there too.
And I love what Latoya just said. I would just add to that, love yourself. Mm-hmm. I think women are special and smart and talented and can do anything they want. I think we're just held down by low self-esteem, which, as we all know, is the result of systematic oppression. So love yourself in addition to absolutely loving and supporting each other.
And I think we need to really be working to dismantle patriarchy. It hurts everybody except for the people it benefits, which is just a very few.
Yeah. So who are even hurt by it too?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, especially when they're aware. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. They're hurt by it too.
Yeah. So thank you all so much. That brings us right up to the hour. Thank you all for joining me. Sherry Jones, thank Amanda you. Mansfield, Latoya Brackett. I'll be sharing those links to Spokane Area Now. It's bracketperception.com to the event that's coming up on Saturday, and all the rest on my site. You can find it on Facebook at facebook.com/praxisradio, or you can go to kyrs.org and find the program page Praxis. I'll be back next week interviewing Sandy Williams, editor and founder of the Black Lens News, about that project and about all of her years of activism. So thank you all, and thanks for listening. You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane 88.1 and 92.3 FM.